You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you, and special greetings to our newest station in Guala, California, KGUA 88.3 FM on the dial. It is the first hour of our Friday program, which means it's time for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We've been doing this for, I think, 7 years now. Bernie, it's going strong. It's great to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And I should just say, if you want to check out Bernie Sanders' website and especially sign his amendment to the Constitution to roll back Citizens United, check out sanders.senate.gov. Bernie, the economy, a big headline news today. Unemployment numbers are out. In some ways, well, there's a whole bunch of issues here. There's a lot of issues.
It's a very busy time in Washington. Let's start with the economy and the new unemployment numbers.
Sure.
The good news for everybody, I guess, unless you're a Republican candidate for president, is the unemployment numbers have gone down from 8.5% to 8.3%. Clearly, good news. We're looking at some 243,000 new jobs being created, 23rd straight month of job growth. All of that is very good. But I think we have to put it in a broader perspective and still understand that while we have come a long way from the end of the Bush administration, where we were losing 700,000 jobs a month, an incredible number, we still have a very, very long way to go. And I hope nobody thinks, well, the recession is behind us, bad times are behind us. That's not true. A whole lot of people continue to hurt. And even when you look at numbers of 8.3%, which is the lowest in years, the true numbers of unemployment, counting people who have given up looking for work in high unemployment areas, people working part-time who want to work full-time, is probably closer to 15%, not 8.3%. Number two, when you look at the economy, unemployment numbers are obviously extremely important. Long-term unemployment has got to be considered as well. We still have far too many people who have been unemployed for a long time, can't find a job. But equally important are wages. Wages. What are people earning? And we can't forget that over the last 10 years, median family income has gone down by about $3,000. You got millions of workers today working longer hours for lower wages than used to be the case. You know, the president, I think, correctly has been talking about the importance of manufacturing, how he wants to rebuild manufacturing. We're seeing some growth in manufacturing. That's good. The bad news is that at least some of these new manufacturing jobs, and one of the reasons we're seeing some spurt in manufacturing jobs is, you know why, Tom?
Well, because our wages suck.
Significantly lower.
Yeah.
And there's some discussion, well, we're becoming more competitive with China. Well, isn't that fantastic? Their wages are going up. Our wages are going down. You have areas in this country where companies are adding new manufacturing jobs, but in fact paying 20, 30, 40% less than those jobs used to pay. So the goal is not just rebuilding manufacturing, which is enormously important. The goal is to rebuild manufacturing at decent wages in this country so that we can expand the middle class rather than see it shrink. So unemployment issue is important. We're making some progress. We have a long, long, long way to go. In talking about the economy and unemployment, that's an issue I have been spending a whole lot of my time on. I know a lot of listeners keep calling up on this issue, and I know that there's a lot of interest out there, and that is the future of the Postal Service. The Postal Service has problems, financial problems, primarily because of the decline of first-class mail being replaced by email. But also, they have been asked to pay an unprecedented amount of money into future retirees' health care benefits, $5.5 billion a year. I am working with a whole lot of senators. This bill will be coming up before on the floor of the Senate. We don't know exactly when, but fairly soon. And my goal is to do everything I can to prevent several hundred thousand jobs in the Postal Service from being lost. My goal is to see that we don't slow down mail delivery system, the mail delivery service, which will eventually lead to the destruction of the post office in any way that we know it today, to shut down Postal Service wants to shut down 3,700 rural post offices, a terrible thing for those towns and for our economy in general, and Saturday mail delivery, et cetera, et cetera. I think there are other ways that we can go forward. One of the main points is Postal Service has to change the way it does business, has to become much more entrepreneurial, has to provide a lot more services. There's a lot more things the Postal Service can be doing than they are right now. So this is an issue that is very important to many, many workers and to our entire economy. So stay tuned on that one. We're gaining support for what we want to do, but we've still got a long way to go.
Great.
Another issue out there, Tom, and we're seeing it playing out. We saw it played out in the Republican primary in Florida, and I just want everybody to understand, anyone who's concerned about any of the many, many issues that you and I talk about or the phone calls that we get, you have to be concerned about the horrendous impact that Citizens United is having on our political process. And everybody knows that by a 5-4 decision, five members of the United States Supreme Court decided that corporations are people. They can spend unlimited sums of money, support or in opposition to a candidate, television ads, radio ads. And what you see, both in terms of Gingrich, in terms of Romney, is that billionaires, multimillionaires, are pouring huge sums of money into super PACs. And let everybody know, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. And we are looking, you know, this guy, one person, Sheldon Adelson. This guy's worth $22 billion. He gave $5 million to Gingrich. His wife gave $5 million. That's how much they make. $5 million is what they make in one day in profits from their casinos.
One day, wow.
One day. So this guy's worth $22 billion. They could double that. They could add a zero to that, make it $50 million. They could make it $500 million.
And not notice it, really.
That's right. So the point is we are evolving politically in this country where you're going to have literally multimillionaires and billionaires contributing huge sums of money. And if you're in a state like Vermont or Rhode Island or many other states, $3 million, $5 million is a very significant amount of money.
Yeah.
Very significant. For these guys, it's chump change. Chump change.
Yeah.
So we have got to overturn Citizens United. We have a constitutional amendment out there that I think goes further than other ones. People can sign up on our website, sanders.senate.gov. I think we're close to 200,000 signatures right now. And also, the good news is that in cities and towns all over America, big cities, L.A., New York City, small towns, in my state, we have March meeting coming up, town meeting coming up early March. We have over 30 towns in the state of Vermont where local governments will be voting on resolutions. People will be voting on resolutions urging the United States Congress to overturn Citizens United. I hope that that spreads all over America. I hope that many of our listeners will walk into their, talk to their local city councilors, talk to their state legislators. We're seeing this effort in the state legislature. Let's build a strong grassroots movement which says that we do not want billionaires to control the political process.
Yeah, amen. And the millionaires tax.
Millionaires tax. I think there is my colleague from Rhode Island, Sheldon Whitehouse, introduced this. I think it's a good piece of legislation consistent with what I and others have been trying to do for years. And that is to recognize that in our economy, not only is the middle class declining and not only are wages going down, but we have got to deal with the growing gap between the rich and the poor and the rich and everybody else, and ask the wealthiest people in this country, whose real tax rate, their effective tax rate, is lowest in decades, to stop paying their fair share of taxes so we can deal with the deficit, deal with the jobs crisis.
There you go. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us taking your calls next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign his constitutional amendment there. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, his newsletter. And it's a great news site in addition to that. Occupying the airwaves, Tom Hartman here with you from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, and it's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, the guy I think of as America's senator, although Vermonters proudly claim him as their own. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website, taking your calls. And Robert in Prague in the Czech Republic watching us on live stream. Robert, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Robert? Maybe not. Okay. I thought that would be a great one to start with, but apparently not. Ringo in Anaheim, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Ringo, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Hey, really quick, I was reading the LA Times paper where the president wants to help underwater homeowners and helping them refinance their houses. My question is with the FHA, because the FHA IMP PMI, the payment, or there's no savings there, but because it's being gobbled up by that. A year ago, they were at 120. Now they're like three times as that. They're above over $350. And if you're able to refinance or streamline your loan, there's basically the savings are being gobbled up by FHA, the PMI, IMP. And I was wondering, is there anything that can be done about that?
Well, I think in general, there is an understanding that we have a huge crisis in terms of foreclosures, in terms of the number of homes in this country that are underwater, and that's bad not only for the homeowners, it's bad for the general economy. So I think the goal of what we want to do is to allow homeowners to remain in their homes, not have to lose their homes, and work out agreements with the banks on reasonable terms that work for the homeowners so they can stay in their homes and pay off their mortgage in a reasonable period of time. So without going into more detail, that's kind of what we'd like to do.
Madeline, New Mexico. Madeline, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I'm calling about the Bush tax cuts. Oh, dear, I'm going to have to go outside for the dogs. Is this a function of President Obama letting them expire? And shouldn't we just let them all expire, even for the middle class?
Well, Madeline, the answer is the Bush tax cuts were set to expire. I was very much opposed to allowing these tax cuts for the wealthiest people in this country to continue. Over a 10-year period, the tax breaks for the top 1 or 2% is about $1 trillion over a 10-year period. So to answer your question, at the end of this year, they do expire. And if nothing happens, they expire. Your suggestion is maybe we should let them expire for everybody. I don't agree. I think the middle class is hurting, and in the middle of a recession, that would not be a good idea. But I absolutely do believe that we should let them expire for the wealthiest people in this country. And this deals with two issues. It will bring substantially more revenue into the government to help us deal with the deficit and to help us deal with the need to create revenue for job creation. But it's also part of an effort that I think we need to make to address the growing income and wealth inequality in America. We have a situation today where the top 400 wealthiest people in America own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million. And income inequality today is worse than any time since just before the Great Depression. So I do not agree that we should end tax breaks for the middle class, but I absolutely, fervently believe we should end them for upper-income people.
Jim in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Jim, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
It's a privilege, Tom and Senator Sanders. I just wanted to ask about this trades and tariffs. To me, Bernie, the trade agreements go hand in hand with job creation. And unless we do something about increasing tariffs or in some way incentivizing, capital to stay in this country and not go overseas, I don't think we're going to see much change in the jobs. I wonder how you feel about it.
Well, Jim, this is an issue, that Tom and I have talked about, I think, from day one on the show, and we are in agreement with you. Just to give you an example of something, yesterday, I had the privilege of being invited to speak before the CWA, the Communication Workers of America in D.C., where they're having their annual convention. And I talked about a whole lot of things. But I think what got the biggest response from the audience there was the need to fundamentally reform our disastrous trade policy. And I got to tell you, the bad news is this has been a bipartisan trade policy from Reagan and Bush to Clinton to George W. Bush to Obama. This mentality that we can open up, have unfettered free trade, and that somehow American workers can compete with people in China who make 75 cents an hour or a dollar an hour. I have always believed that that is nonsense, and it has worked to the great detriment of the American worker in terms of job loss and lowered wages. And when I read in the papers that people are saying, the administration, well, one of the reasons we can bring jobs back from China is because wages are going down in America, and by the way, going up in China. Then you got transportation costs, you got more productivity in the United States, higher quality of work. But to be arguing, isn't it great? We can bring jobs back to America because wages are going down 20 or 30%. Man, that is not an argument that I want to be making. Now, I want to just say, as listeners know, I've been working with Smithsonian Museum to get them to be purchasing more American-made products. We've been working with another government agency, subcontractor who deals with the National Monuments, having progress there. We're now working with the Veterans Administration. Just spoke to General Shinseki, head of the VA. We want to see that the VA is selling more products in their gift shops, etc., that are made in America.
That's great. It's absolutely great. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can check out our website at tomhartman.com. Drop into our free live chat room. It's open 24/7. Make your own blogs, post on our message boards, all kinds of cool stuff. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get out there and get active. The Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And Bernie, you're still here with us?
I'm right here.
Okay, great. Ray in Dartmouth, Mass. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. How are you?
Good.
My question and my comment is the Wall Street Journal just came out with an article talking about the effective corporate tax rate is actually now at a 40-year low of 12.1%. That's the effective corporate tax rate here in America. Yet we have the Republicans who want to lower the tax rate. My question to you is, how come they haven't created a million jobs a month, the corporations, if the effective tax rate is 12%?
Well, you got it, Ray. I mean, that is the point. We have given them everything that they have wanted. We have lowered the corporate tax rate. We have created a situation where 25% of the major corporations in this country pay nothing in taxes. A couple of years ago, ExxonMobil, making billions, didn't pay a nickel in taxes. We allow them to stash money in the Cayman Islands. So for corporations, their taxes are quite low. And by the way, there's a lot of distortion that goes out in the media because the media keeps talking about, and the Chamber of Commerce keeps talking about, the corporate tax rate is 35%, but very, very, very few corporations pay that. Ray's point is quite right. So we're looking at corporate tax rates very, very low. We're looking at individual tax rates for the richest people in this country being the lowest in decades, the point that Warren Buffett often makes. And Ray is right. If we have done all of those things, trickle-down economics would tell us that having given these guys these tax breaks, they'd be investing heavily in the United States of America and creating millions and millions and millions of jobs. Well, needless to say, as every unemployed worker in America knows, that's not quite true. What has happened is, A, where there have been investments, a lot of these investments have been in China and other countries, and B, the richest people in this country have used their tax breaks to become even richer. And we're looking at the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth. Trickle-down economics is a fraud. Its only goal is to make the wealthy and large corporations wealthier, and in fact, it has worked. That is what is happening today. But if you're in the middle class, if you're a working person, you are hurting. So Ray's point is a very good one.
John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I have a civil liberties question. Several years ago, the FBI had raided some homes here in Minneapolis and also in Chicago under giving material aid to terrorism. However, most of these people, had just spoken to groups that were considered controversial. They didn't actually give any money or any other kinds of things except maybe medical aid and things of this sort. And I was wondering under, I think it's the Patriot Act, and there's another act that was passed that I don't remember. I think it is the Secretary of State has allowed these raids, is saying that even talking to groups in countries where, in other countries that we consider these groups to be terrorists, that you are giving material aid to this. And it's kind of fallen under the radar, and I was wondering if there's anything being done or any discussion in Congress to protect citizens who are...
The answer, John, is I think not enough. I don't think it's the Secretary of State who is making these decisions, probably the Department of Justice and U.S. attorneys. I voted against the Patriot Act. I think we all want to make sure that we are vigilant in protecting the American people from terrorism. But I believe very strongly that we can do that by protect the constitutional rights of all Americans that have due process. There has been a lot of concern that recently in the reauthorization of the Department of Defense bill, we've given the military power to go after Americans who are accused of terrorism and take away due process for them as well. So, John, I can't tell you that we're making much progress on that issue, but it's an issue we should absolutely keep focused on.
Charlie in Huntington, West Virginia, you're on the air with Bernie.
Yeah, a lot of the 1% got rich on the Iraq war. Shouldn't the voters be made aware that the GOP will go back to war? At the same time, they claim we're broke.
Well, Charlie makes a good point. When we talk about how we got into this deficit situation, which is going to be over $1 trillion next year, and we have a $15 trillion national debt, I think Charlie's point is that we can't forget that Bush got us into two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but forgot to pay for them. And in fact, not only did he forget to pay for them in an unprecedented effort, he actually gave tax breaks while we were in war and not paying for the wars. Did military, and also what we have to remember if we're serious about deficit reduction, is that while there is some talk about cutting military spending, the military budget is huge, it is complicated. And we are now in my office just studying what that means. But I believe we should be, as a nation, very wary about spending more money on defense than the rest of the world combined, seeing our military budget triple since 1997. I believe that we can make sensible cuts in military spending and must do that if we are serious about moving to a deficit reduction. I have a real problem with some of my Republican colleagues who think it's a great idea to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, the Environmental Protection Agency, and every other program that benefits working families, but at the same time, they want to increase funding for the military.
Roy in Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, I don't know if this is my time to talk.
It is.
Roy,
you're on the air.
From New York.
You're on the air, right?
Question,
right.
Well, not a question. I guess just a statement and a response for Senator Sanders. I got in at the tail end of your conversation regarding the superpowers giving monies to the candidates, be it Republican, Democrat, and that because of the gentleman's wealth, this was a drop in the bucket for him to make a $5 million contribution. I mean, there's such an easy fix to all of this if something could be enacted that you just put a cap on candidate spending, whether they're billionaires or millionaires. If candidate one has $2 million to spend in a campaign for January, candidate two, who's a billionaire that can, I think they said 1,700 times one commercial aired in Florida during the primaries because he could afford to have that sent out to the general public. I mean, that's almost subliminal advertising in a negative sense.
Well, Roy, let me just say, if I can, Roy, the problem with your position is that that's not what's going on. The super PACs, because of Citizens United, they are not contributing to candidates. These are not, this is not money that goes to the Newt Gingrich campaign. The super PAC is theoretically, is quote unquote, I mean, this is the biggest joke in the world, but quote unquote, it is an independent PAC that is putting money on the air. And what the Supreme Court has said, they can put as much money as they want on radio and television. Right now, you could not make a $1 million, $5 million contribution to Newt Gingrich's campaign. You can't do that. There's a limit. What you can do, though, is put unlimited sums of money on radio and television. That's what Citizens United has done, and that's why we have to end Citizens United and once again make it clear that Congress and state legislatures have the right to regulate campaign spending.
Which means go to sanders.senate.gov and sign Bernie's amendment to the Constitution. Todd in East Reigate, Vermont, you're on the air with your senator.
Yes, Mr. Sanders, how are you? Hi, Todd, how are you? Not bad. I was just looking to see what kind of update we've got on the closures of these rural post offices. You know, I don't want to see them closed because there's my town and the next town over, and they're slated to close, and we don't get much in the way of tax money this way. So,
part is that's the only thing I'd like to see. Postmistress there.
Yep, she's there. She's been there for 18 years.
Right. And Jenny Nelson in my office, I think, is one of your neighbors, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, let me pick up on Todd's point.
Thank you, Todd.
Todd raises a very good point. And East Reigate is a beautiful town, rural town in Vermont. Post office has decided that they want to shut down 3,700 rural post offices all over America, including 15 in Vermont. And we think that is a very, very bad idea for a large number of reasons. First of all, in many small towns, a post office is more than a post office. It is a place where people come together as human beings, people in a town, and they share information. Second of all, for many senior citizens, shutting down a rural post office will make it very, very difficult for them to get their mail. What we are, to answer Todd's question, we are working very, very hard to prevent that from happening.
Thank you, Bernie. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders on our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And let me repeat this again, sanders.senate.gov. There's a constitutional amendment there to roll back Citizens United. You can sign up. Oh, it's our first hour of Friday, which means it's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls. Deborah in Buford, Georgia, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm so nervous. My question is this. Senator Bernie Sanders pointed out that ExxonMobil doesn't pay any taxes, hasn't paid any taxes. Yet we use our military for the purpose of defending oil or safeguarding the oil. The wars have been about oil. We're at the Strait of Hormuz right now, protecting the oil coming and going through there. Why are we having to pay for the interest of the oil barons when our gas prices are so high and all the tax funding for the military is coming from the taxpayer and not these oil baron corporations.
Well, I think you make a very, very cogent point. And the answers, I think, are severalfold. For a start, we have got to break our dependence on the importation of foreign oil, which is somewhere around, numbers go up and down, $350 billion a year, an extraordinary sum of money. And we have to move toward energy independence. And the way you do that, keeping in mind, you also have to keep in mind that we're trying to combat greenhouse gas emissions and global warming, which is wreaking havoc on our planet. And if we don't get a handle on that, we'll only be worse in years to come. And we can do that. And by the way, when we do that, by transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy, then you're not going to have to fight wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for oil. So what I believe the challenge of our moment is to move aggressively toward energy efficiency, i.e., we can have by the year 2025, and in fact, we have legislation that will make this happen already. It's in law. We can substantially increase the mileage per gallon that our automobiles and our trucks get. We should also be moving as a nation toward weatherization of our buildings and move toward wind, solar, geothermal, biomass. When you do all of those things, you end the need to go to wars in the Middle East, spend money on the military. As Deborah pointed out, you're going to clean up our environment, you're going to reverse global warming, and you are going to create, over a period of time, millions of jobs in the United States of America. This is a win-win-win-win situation, and we've got to be aggressive in that area.
Chris in St. Helens, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. As we move to restrict money as speech, I was wondering, how do you address the increased power of the four or five companies that control 90% of the media? And would you be willing to support legislation that identifies the web as part of the commons, such as we do with the airwaves and the freedom of the press?
Well, let me just say this, Chris. You make a very good point. I mean, we've been talking today and in recent weeks about the disastrous implications and what's happening on the ground with Citizens United and what's likely to become even worse with corporations and billionaires controlling the political process. But Chris's point is we have to recognize that you have a small number of media conglomerates that to a large degree determine what the American people see, hear, and read. And one of the interesting tie-ins between Citizens United and the media is if you are a television station owner, you know what? You are enthusiastic about Citizens United. Tom, have you read about the kinds of money coming into the television station?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, in Florida, it was millions and millions.
And
tens of millions of
they are able to charge the super PACs significantly more than they do candidates, because candidates have to get buy ads for the lowest rates possible. So you had a tie-in now between the super PAC, Citizens United, and the television stations, who think this is a great idea. They're making money hand over fist. But Chuck's point is important to remember. You got a small number of companies controlling what we see here and read, an issue that has got to be dealt with. Chris talks about the Internet, and clearly many of us are aware that we must do everything that we can to prevent censorship of the Internet, either by government or by large corporations, which is why we support Internet neutrality. But all of those issues are out there, and we're fighting them on all of those fronts.
Cece in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Time's
Good morning,
getting tight
gentlemen.
Here, by the way.
You're welcome. Good morning, gentlemen. Senator Sanders, I wonder why this administration has not repealed the Patriot Act or any of the other acts. In fact, has escalated the behavior, which has what's the word I'm looking for? It's taken away a lot of the civil liberties of we the people. Thank you.
Well, Cece, I think, you know, there is a lot of disappointment among many Americans with regard to the Obama administration's approach toward civil liberties in general. feeling that they have not done a particularly good job. In fact, frankly, there is a lot of disappointment with the Obama administration in a number of areas. I think where the American people find themselves today politically is saying we are looking at a right-wing extremist party called the Republican Party that wants to repeal virtually every single piece of legislation passed in the last 80 years or weaken legislation that protects the middle class and working families. They want to make cuts or privatize Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, EPA, etc. And people certainly want to fight against that. But on the other hand, they're looking at the Obama administration, certainly wishing that they would be much more aggressive, not only in areas of civil liberties, which is what Cece is talking about, but on health care, the economy, sustainable energy, and so forth. So that's kind of where we are as a nation right now.
Bernie, we need to work to get 20 more Bernie Sanders in the United States Senate as and in the House of Representatives, you know, 100 more in the House of Representatives. And then the president will have their back and he can pull his stuff off, I think. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
You do such a great work. Sanders.Senate.gov, Bernie's website. Check it out. We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Our lines are slammed. We're going to get back to your calls in just a moment. But first, I wanted to bring on an old friend of the show and one of the finest investigative reporters working in America today, Lee Fung. Lee, welcome back.
Nice to talk to you, Tom.
Great to have you. Yeah, it's been a while. Where have you been and what are you doing? What are you up to now?
Well, I left Think Progress back in November, and I started a new gig. And today we've launched a new blog called republicreport.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new investigative blog that's going to be going after corporate money and politics, special interests influence, the revolving door. It'll be edited by myself and another former Think Progress blogger, Zed Jelani, and it'll have a lot of interesting things. We'll be taking on corruption in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and we'll even have some really interesting guest contributors, including Jack Abramoff.
Wow, that's great. So what are the latest stories that you have been digging up?
Well, you know, last weekend was the big Koch meeting. This one,
as in Koch brothers, not the beverage, KOCH.
Yeah. Right. The billionaire petrochemical Tea Party financiers, David and Charles Koch, convened these twice annual secret meetings that we first reported 2 years ago. Well, their meeting last weekend was in Indian Wells, California, and they basically plotted out the 2012 election. I snuck into the hotel that they're having their event, but unfortunately I was kicked out the morning that guests were arriving. However, we did get a few interviews. We talked to a Koch deputy at the airport. We identified a lot of the donors as they flew in.
And what's the carry-home message from this?
Insane secrecy. If you think that the super PACs are dangerous for our democracy because people are creating shell corporations and funneling money to Mitt Romney, you haven't seen anything yet. The largest ad purchase of the year actually hasn't gained many headlines. Americans for Prosperity, the Koch group, bought $6 million worth of ads just 2 weeks ago. That's more than anyone else has purchased in the cycle in a single buy.
Wow.
And they're just getting started.
Where did they buy that and for what's the cause that they were promoting?
There was an anti-Obama ad, basically attacking the Solyndra scandal and saying that Obama has, you know, crony capitalist problems and he's kind of enjoying laying people off because he's playing politics.
So they're trying to take down the president before there's even a Republican nominee.
Exactly, and they're trying to head off some of the arguments that President Obama and his team are making against Romney. It's very interesting, but a lot of this stuff isn't being fully reported because Americans for Prosperity, of course, doesn't disclose any of their donors. And as we identified the private planes flying into the Koch meeting last weekend, there are a lot of new donors new to this meeting, including Kenny Trout, very wealthy Texas-based investor. So the thing here is that none of these donors will show up in the Federal Election Commission reports because they're using an elaborate array of nonprofits and foundations to basically funnel money back and forth so their fingerprints aren't attached.
Amazing. And people can read about that at republicreport.org?
Yes.
Okay. What else are you digging up?
Well, we actually spoke to Anita Dunn. She was the former White House communications director. She's still advising the White House. She's visited the White House over 30 times. She's advising the Obama campaign. She's very powerful. She has a lot of access to the president. But the troubling thing here is that she's working for a number of corporate lobbying campaigns directly to defeat Obama's reforms. She's working for Pepsi to defeat Michelle Obama's nutrition standards. She's working for Kaplan University to defeat Obama's regulations on for-profit colleges, many of them fraudulent and completely racked with scandal. And she's also working for a coalition of corporations that are looking for essentially a bailout. It's a special tax cut on their repatriated profits, and that's everyone from Google to Cisco down the list.
Yeah.
So while she's lobbying for these corporations, she's advising the president of the United States, the leader of the free world. It's an interesting conflict, and it certainly undercuts the promise that Obama had to reform Washington.
How does she rationalize that, and to what extent do you think that the president and his administration are aware of these purpose of these side activities of hers, or did you just unearth it and lay it out, and this might be the end of Anita Dunn's influence in the White House?
You know, this is actually part of the reason I went off and helped create Republic Report, because this is probably one of the most glaring examples of a very close White House advisor who has the president's ear whenever she wants it, working for corporations. But this is not the only example. There are literally hundreds of others where people are becoming unregistered lobbyists and lobbying the president, because President Obama has put up very strict reforms to stop registered lobbyists. But what simply has happened is that lobbyists are refusing to register. They're taking on corporate clients and are calling themselves PR experts.
Or historians.
Or historians, exactly.
As in Newt Gingrich.
When I talked to Anita Dunn, she used essentially the Newt Gingrich excuse. She said, well, look, I'm not a registered lobbyist, so I can do what I want, and people need advocates, and, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
Wow. So, but again, to the question, does President Obama know what she's up to?
Well, he certainly knows now if he reads the republicreport.org, and we'll have many other stories like this. There are other very prominent Democratic lobbying firms, Democratic PR firms, Democratic fundraisers who are literally taking on clients to defeat Obama's agenda, taking on public interest policies, trying to, you know, strip them down, water them down, block them, at the same time advising the president. So, you know,
that's
these
incredible.
Are important stories that we're going to be working on.
Li Fong, is this just an illustration of the power of money in politics, that it's completely transpartisan and it's totally corrupting?
Let me give you a little example. If you're working on the Hill as a Democratic aide to a top senator, you're making, what, $80,000, $90,000?
Probably.
A headhunting firm on K Street, maybe a little bit more, maybe 100 at most, headhunting firms on K Street will offer top aides to Democratic senators $500,000 to start if they sell out and start, you know, influence peddling their former boss.
Right. And this is the reason why you can't find an empty restaurant in this town on a weeknight, and you can't get dinner for two for under $50.
Exactly. I mean, the rest of the country is suffering while these Democratic lobbyists and Republican lobbyists are living high on the hog. But, you know, it's difficult to call this out because people hide their connections. They don't register as lobbyists. And frankly, I think the left has been too complacent in calling out folks in the Democratic Party.
Right. So we need to be revealing both sides, which you guys are doing at republicreport.org. This is not a partisan website. This is about, what would you call it, good government, corruption in government?
Yeah, we're trying to defeat the corrupting influence of money in politics. And, you know, we're looking at national stories, local stories. We'll be reporting on the 2012 campaign. And, you know, we'll even do a little bit of international coverage. This is a global phenomenon of governments being corrupted across the globe, everywhere from England to India. So,
yeah, how did Carlos Slim make all that money in Mexico?
Exactly. I mean, people talk about, you know, this is a discussion between free markets and socialism. I don't really think it's that simple. There are huge monopolies all over the world that are suppressing dissent, and I think ruining economic results for most people. So at the end of the day, this is a question about money and politics.
And they're also getting, in the case of Carlos Slim in Mexico, for example, getting monopoly. I mean, he's made most of his money with his giant cell phone, you know, monopoly across the country, and he's one of the richest guys in the world. And this is just not at all uncommon. You know, the corporations, once they reach the point where they can corrupt politicians, they start getting the politicians to refigure the laws to make it harder and harder for entrepreneurs to break into the marketplace. And
you know, this is one of the only issues where the Tea Party and Occupy actually agree. If you look at the polling, both movements, the really only two vibrant street movements we've seen in the last 4 years, are both upset with the level of corporate capture in government, the power of corporate executives, and the out-of-touch level of Congress in not responding to people's needs.
Amazing. Lee Fong, republicreport.org. Check it out. Lee, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks. Keep up the great
work. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more. By the way, that was republicreport.org. Check it out. Brand new site, brand new organization, brand new work. 16 minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike in Seattle listening on Talk 1090. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call. I love the brunch with Bernie. He's super intelligent and really wish we had more of him.
Well, you know, if enough of us get involved in our political process, someday we will have more of Bernie, more Bernies.
Yeah.
You know? It's really that simple.
Inspirational for sure.
Yep.
I wanted to follow up on a couple things with the HR 2006 USPS Act, and I just wanted to urge Senator Sanders, hope to talk to him on air, but urge him to just really push forward on this because there's hundreds of thousands of jobs and the ripple effect from all of that are at stake.
Oh, he's hammering on this thing.
You know,
This is an all-out assault on the largest unionized employer in the United States, which is the Postal Service.
Absolutely.
And that's why they're doing it.
They're not deciding to shut down.
Yeah,
well, they're not deciding to shut down. They're being forced to.
That's right. They're being forced to by a poison pill piece of legislation that was put in during the Bush administration that where they knew it would explode in 5 or 6 or 7 years, and it's exploding right now. And you are absolutely spot on. And it's something that we need to do something about. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Tom, I think we need to educate the people in a very keep it simple, stupid form, the people that are on the right that are being manipulated, to what's really ensuing here politically between the haves and the have-nots and the middle class that's being destroyed. Mm-hmm. And the term I come up with is the high-paid media salespeople, okay, you know, through Fox and CNN and the rest of them, they are deliberately selling economic distortion. That's what it is, Tom, economic distortion, as a normal and wholesome reality. And you know yourself, Tom, that free trade and free markets are two distinctively different realities.
Yep.
And monopoly capitalism and capitalism are also two distinctively different realities. And you can't have a true free market system when the people aren't free and the playing field isn't level. So we're being bamboozled. And I think the best way to say it is to tell these morons, and I like it a lot of these or link a lot of these Republicans with the philosophical view that they did a poll, and I don't know if it's true or not. It's a rumor. I can't confirm it. But 90% of the people that died in that tragic accident on the interstate that were driving 75 mile an hour in fog and they couldn't see their front of their hood, the poll that they took that they associated themselves with Republican right wingers, so they're driving blindly.
Okay, Armin, I doubt that, right? I really seriously doubt that. But Armin, your point is really well taken, and in fact, let me take it a step farther. If the corporate media in America was really interested in reporting what's going on, then all throughout the Florida primary, it would have been, okay, the Wall Street billionaires now are up to 13,000 ads that they've run on our TV stations, and Shelley Adelson is up to 300 ads that he's run on our stations, you know, on behalf of Newt Gingrich and the Wall Street Billionaires. They've run 13,000 ads on behalf of Mitt Romney. Let's see which billionaire group wins this election. You know, which front man gets the most votes. That's how they should have covered it, because that's what it was. And, of course, that's not how they covered it. In fact, there was no discussion of that, or very little discussion of that, virtually no discussion of that in the corporate media. Why? Because they're making a fortune off this stuff. Why, you know, why kill the golden calf? All right. Paul in San Francisco. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Tom, hello. I'm calling because I've been thinking about arms deals.
Yeah.
And like when the United States sells weapons to Israel, what you hear about on the news is the U.S. sold blah, blah, blah to Israel, and it's this big deal.
Yeah, I think our most recent sale actually was to Saudi Arabia, but, you know, point taken.
Okay, well...
The big deal. We just, like, a $30 billion deal we made with Saudi Arabia.
Does the U.S. government make the money on that, or do they just broker the deal and the arms manufacturers make all that money? Because I'd like the media to say, well, Boeing earned this much on this deal.
That's right. And by and large, it's the defense contractors who make the money on the deal. There's no, like, special tax on those things, although the U.S., you know, because big arms trades, like this deal with Saudi Arabia where they're buying fighter jets, those are regulated by the federal government, so the federal government inserts itself in the negotiations and actually acts as a advocate, shall we say, for the arms industry in making these sales. Now, they rationalize this as a good thing because they say that those companies are then hiring American workers, and so, you know, that money is coming to the United States. Those workers will, you know, have decent jobs. They'll also pay taxes, and so there will be tax revenue to the federal government that will more than cover the cost of it. But I'm of the opinion that, you know, saying, hey, look at us. We're the biggest arms manufacturer in the world, and this is a big part of our GDP, is a pretty pathetic way to brag about your economy. And that, you know, I'm with you, Paul. That this is not the kind of economy that we should be having. Mark in Ocean Shores, Washington. Hey, Mark, we got a minute to the break. What's up? Mark?
Oh, hi, this is Max.
Oh, Max. I'm sorry. Max, yeah.
No, that's okay. You got to love the show, and you and Bernie are just incredible. Have you ever heard of the Townsend Plan back in the 30s? There was a...
I know the Townsend Act.
Plan that was supposed, well, a plan, I guess, that was supposed to issue a certain amount of money to people that are elderly. But it was replaced, of course, by Social Security.
Okay.
My point is that since we are a country more or less of buyers, purchasers, how about we had a minimum income of, say, $50,000 per adult male or female? And, you know, they pay taxes on that or whatever.
You mean a guaranteed minimum income for everybody?
Exactly.
Yeah. This is something, if you go back and get a copy of Thomas Paine's book, Agrarian Justice, which is one of his least known books, and I think it's one of his most important. And in that book, he suggested that every time a baby is born, the government should take a very small amount of money and invest it, create it into a fund to provide a basic minimum income for that person's life.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, Max, great idea. Thomas Paine already thought of it in 1893, I think it was, but nobody's ever done it. 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program, and Anything Goes Friday here. Danny in New York City. Hey, Danny, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I was just wondering if perhaps we're not being a bit nostalgic about the blue-collar life that existed. I mean, your dad, or I'm a little younger than you, my granddad worked in Detroit on the assembly line and got the hell out as soon as he could. Mm-hmm. And my dad got the vet bill, and he got to write, and we got to live in California and Arcadia, and he wrote the national park stuff. And the way I was raised with the assembly line and the tool and dime and the spark plugs and all that, like Michael Moore's dad, that was something to be left behind.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if the Occupy kids and the you know, the stuff that's going on, and the American dream is just, it's a different dream now. I mean, sure. I think.
Well, let me share my take with you on this. If you go back to basic econ, right? I mean, the basic theories of economics, Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations. What is the wealth of nations? The wealth of a nation is its natural resources as they can be massaged by human labor. And now in the age of robotics and machinery, you know, human labor by proxy. And so ultimately, a nation that makes things is a nation that increases its own wealth. And the example Adam Smith used was a tree limb on the ground has no intrinsic value other than perhaps to the algae around it that might eat it eventually. But if you pick up that tree limb and you whittle it into an axe handle, you have now created something that has value that might last several generations. So manufacturing, taking raw materials and converting them into things that are useful over a period of time increases wealth. Doesn't increase money necessarily, but that's what the wealth of a nation is what it's able to create. We have gone from a nation that made things, and yeah, we went through an industrial revolution that decreased the demand of labor to make the same amount of stuff. I mean, you know, today our car assembly lines have probably, you know, 10% of the number of workers on them that Henry Ford's did, because there's so much robotics involved. But nonetheless, we went from a nation that made things to now we're a nation that, by and large, the only manufactured products that we make are food for each other and weapons for the rest of the world. And that's, you know, most of what we make. Everything else we've outsourced to other nations where they make it. And the nation that makes things is the nation that's actually producing wealth. And so I would submit to you that, you know, back in the 50s and the 60s, in fact, 1960, it was 66 or 67, there was a Time magazine article. I dug it out a while ago, and we did a whole thing about it, you know, on this show, about the leisure society. And this was in the 60s, like this was when my dad was working in the tool and die shop, right? And what it said was, you know, these jobs are going to start getting fewer and fewer because robotics was coming in a big way in the 60s. So what's going to happen? Well, productivity will increase, which means that revenues will increase and the wealth of the nation will increase and the demand for labor will decrease. So what will happen is people will have more leisure time. We went from the average American working a 60 or 70 hour week in the 19th century to working a 50 hour week in the first two decades of the 20th century the first three decades to the 40 hour week being passed in the late 1930s to a 40 hour week. And what they were saying was, you know, by the year 2000, you can expect that the average American will have the same level, same standard of living, but only have to work 20 or 30 hours a week. And the fact of the matter is, that if Reagan hadn't come along and changed our tax policies and changed our basic economic assumptions and gone to trickle-down supply-side economics, if that hadn't happened, thus provoking 80% of all new wealth that has been created since Reagan came into office going just to the top 1%, they've seen their wealth go up 257% since Reagan came into office, whereas the bottom, the average working person has seen their income basically flat since Reagan came into office. Had Reagan not changed those rules of the game, then, yeah, there would be a lot fewer people doing manufacturing. We would still be manufacturing, and not just Reagan. I mean, there's been several presidents who've been involved in these trade deals. We would still be making things. We would still be wealthy. I mean, look at how wealthy, for example, China has become just making things, right? We would be more wealthy, and people would be able to work fewer hours. We would have that leisure society. And so that's my take on why we need to reestablish a manufacturing base. Sure, the jobs aren't going to be the kind of grimy stuff like the guys in my dad's tool and die shop or the one where he worked. You know, we walk out at the end of the day with grease all over them. They're, you know, this is not going to be so much like that. But, you know, I remember in the 60s and 70s, the Jetsons, remember the comic, that cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to take place in the year 2010, as I recall. And in the Jetsons, you know, George Jetson would go to work and he sat with his feet up on the desk all day and complained about the fact that Mr. Spacely, his boss, was such a slave driver, he made him push the button three times a day. That was George's work, was to push the button, you know, that then made things. But, you know, it was still, there were still people involved in the process, and it was, you know, here's the leisure society. And we didn't get that. Instead, what we got was class stratification, more riches going to the rich, and now we've got a society where an industry that, you know, it's sometimes called FIRE, finance, insurance, real estate, and I forget what E stands for, but in any case, it's basically, you know, the financial services industry. That industry used to be 5, 6, 7% of our economy, and now it's like 30% of our economy, and it doesn't produce anything. It's just moving things from one hand to another, and people skimming stuff off the top in the process, and mostly moving them out of the hands of the middle class and into the hands of the rich. We need to get back to a manufacturing economy. Even though it won't create zillions of jobs, it will create a lot of wealth. And that wealth, if it's appropriately distributed across the, you know, with a reasonable tax code, if it's appropriately distributed, instead of having CEOs and, you know, making 400 times or 500 times or 1,000 times or 10,000 times in the case of the financial services industry, what the entry-level workers are making, will go back to the way it was when Reagan came into office, where the average CEO is making 30 times what the worker is making, which is still a hell of a lot. You know, if you've got workers making $50,000, $60,000 and a CEO is making 30 times that, that's a lot of money. And now 500 times that, that's breathtaking. So, Danny, that's my response. Thanks a lot for the call. I'm going into rant mode here, so that tells me I should take another caller here. Mike in Cleveland, Georgia. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, I'm going to give you something else to rant about.
Okay.
I went uptown the other day, and everywhere I looked, I see these bank-owned properties. And our tax base here is falling off because of it. And I was wondering, since they did that deal where corporations are people, too, if some of the folks you got that's smarter than they can figure out how they get away with not paying our property taxes, if they're people, they ought to pay the same property taxes we have.
Here's how they do it, Mike. Here's how they do it. They play a game, and thank you very much for the call. They play a game between governments, and Bernie Sanders has talked about this in the past. In fact, he has suggested legislation to fix this, although nobody in Congress will take it seriously. I think it's a really important thing. You get a corporation that's saying in your state, in Georgia, and they're doing business in Georgia, and their property tax, and it's a big company, they get a couple hundred employees, and their property taxes are a couple $1 million a year, which is supporting the local community, supporting the schools, supporting the septic system, supporting the water system, you know, supporting the local infrastructure, paying for the police, and they don't want to pay those property taxes. They want to dump it on you. They want to dump it on all the average taxpayers. So what that corporation does is they say, you know, we're paying a couple $1 million a year in property taxes here in Georgia. Is there any state out there that if we moved our factory to their state, they would be happy with no property taxes, us paying no property tax? But we will hire a couple hundred people, so those people will be paying state income taxes, and they'll own homes, and they'll be paying property taxes. So, you know, it's going to increase the vibrancy, the economic vibrancy of your state. And so then Illinois comes along or Alabama comes along and says, yeah, we'll give you a 20-year suspension of property taxes. In fact, to sweeten the pot, we might even give you a couple $100,000 worth of land or, you know, that kind of thing. And you see this over and over and over again in the United States where these corporations play one municipality or one state against the other, trying to get the best deal they can. And it should be against the law. And you can't explicitly make it against the law because it would be a violation of the right to contract under the Constitution. But what Bernie suggested, and I thought it was one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard come out of Bernie Sanders' mouth, this was years ago on this program, and it hasn't been revisited in a long time because, like I said, Congress won't even consider it. But what he suggested was pass a law that says that any state that the state itself or any municipality in that state or any county in that state that engages in the practice of competing with other states by offering freebies or goodies or tax discounts to corporations to move out of other states. In other words, any state that participates in this race to the bottom within the United States loses their federal highway funds, because that's not unconstitutional. Federal highway funds states are not constitutionally entitled to. This is how Jimmy Carter enforced the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit back during the oil crisis when he wanted to save oil in the United States. And it was successful in doing that, by the way, is he said, you know, I can't put a national speed limit into effect. The Commerce Clause, that would really be stretching the Commerce Clause. But what I can do is say, if your state wants federal highway matching funds, you have to have a top speed limit of 55 miles per hour. And they did that for a few years, and it worked. So why not say to states and municipalities and counties, you know, if you want federal highway funds, don't engage in this race to the bottom kind of stuff where you end up with half the companies in your state not paying any taxes at all because they've gamed the system.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
For your calls, and we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service in just a moment. Here in Washington, D.C., Tom Hartman with you 45 minutes past the hour.
Thank God it's
helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. And Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us, brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment. And Victoria, I understand, please correct me if I'm wrong on this. First of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I understand that, you know, John Boehner pushed really, really hard to have this automatic defense cuts if the super committee didn't work out. And I think they call it sequestration.
Sequestration, yes.
Right. And now he's saying, you know, we need to revisit sequestration. We need to revisit these automatic cuts. The military doesn't want them. Congress doesn't want them. Where's the president on this? And he's like, you know, he set up this whole deal. He put these horrible things in it to prove his that he was going to do it. And now he's walking away from it. Do I have that right?
Yeah, and not only him, there are quite a few people who are going wobbly on this.
Yeah.
Five Republican senators yesterday introduced a bill that would, led by John McCain and another John.
Yeah.
From Texas.
Kyle.
I'm going blank, but they were all, defense hawks.
Uh-huh.
And they introduced a bill that will stop the $5 billion in defense sequestration.
Wow. So apparently their word means nothing when they say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do it this way, and we promise, cross our hearts and hope to die. Their word means nothing.
Yeah, because the belief is that this is so draconian and so dreadful that it mustn't happen and the military will be damaged because over $400 billion in cuts to the military is already taking place. And Defense Secretary Panetta and the president have both said that the extra $500 billion in cuts to the military would be disastrous. What they don't say is what the president goes on to say, which is that's why the sequestration must never take place, and that's why they must make a deal so that the sequestration doesn't take place, and that's what Congress is supposed to work on this year, to make a deal so that this $1.2 trillion in cuts from domestic and defense never takes place in January 2013.
Right. So there's still a possibility, even though there's not a super committee anymore, that something could be worked out other than simply saying, you know, we renege on the deal.
Yes, they could be working on this right now, all of them, to cut a deal so that they come up with enough spending cuts and other offsets, possibly tax increases.
Yeah.
Possibly other ways of doing it that would mean that they don't have to have these draconian cuts. The reason that these cuts were agreed to by the leadership was so that they would never have to take place.
Right, by the Republicans, in fact.
Republicans
very, very interesting.
And
but
everybody.
You know, we should also keep in mind that the defense budget has tripled since 1997. So I disagree with all of them that these cuts would be draconian and eviscerate our military. But that's a whole other thing. What else is going on in the world, Victoria?
Oh, a great deal is going on. January jobs numbers are out.
Mm.
And the economy created 243,000 jobs in January, net jobs. It was projected that they would create 150,000. So they did very much better. 243,000, the most in 9 months. Right. Unemployment rate fell 2 ticks to 8.3%, its lowest point in nearly 3 years.
5 months in a row, the unemployment rate has dropped. And this was despite the fact that, what was it, 14,000 people were laid off in red states by Republican governors who were aggressively laying off government workers?
That's right. This is happening every month, that you will see a higher number than this of private sector jobs created, and it's always offset by public sector jobs lost, government jobs that are being lost every month. This always is the case. Exactly. The president spoke about, both the president and the Republicans spoke about this today. It was quite interesting. The president, who was launching his $6 billion initiative to get veterans, that 9/11 veterans to work, said, we can't go back to the policies that led to the recession. We want Washington to be helping with the recovery. And he got very, very basic. So I want to send a clear message to Congress. Do not slow down the recovery that we're on. Don't muck it up.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep it moving in the right direction.
Sounds like a plan. But on the other hand, the Republicans, I mean, if they get these cuts that you were just talking about, if they cut the federal budget, if they cut U.S. federal programs, that's going to be massive layoffs in the public sector, which is going to increase unemployment, which apparently is what the Republicans are all about right now, because it's going to make the economy worse, which hurts the president's chances of reelection.
Well, that's a possibility. We're also going to see an uptick in the next few months anyway if American Airlines goes through with its plan to cut 13,000 jobs. The Republicans didn't see the numbers quite the same way as most people saw the numbers. Representative Jeff Hensarling said, today is an indication of another failure of this president's policies, 36 months in a row of 8% plus unemployment. Representative Bill Flores of Texas said, the president's team is going to trot out their happy faces today, but the American people are going to say, not so fast. Even some Republicans are not happy with this negative reaction because they feel that they're cannibalizing their own success, whereas Republicans could, in fact, piggyback on this and take credit for the improvement.
Yeah, in other words, they could say, look at this. We've been working with the president, even though they haven't. We've been working with the president, and things are getting better. Elect us.
Right, and they're not doing that.
Right. Yeah, well, maybe that's because they haven't been working with the president. But in any case, what else is going on?
Well, as you may have heard, U.S. officials are concerned by Israel's statements on an Iran possible strike. Defense Minister Ehud Barak yesterday saying about possible airstrikes on Iran, whoever says later may find that later is too late. Later is too late, which he said in English. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta saying today that the key to stopping Iran from getting a nuclear bomb is keeping global support for tough economic sanctions, but also saying to U.S. airmen in Germany that if Iran does not change course, the U.S. is, quote, prepared to respond if we have to.
Oh, jeez. This is the, well, don't give me, this is the last thing we need is another war in the Middle East. I mean, Pakistan's got the bomb, North Korea's got the, don't get me started. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What is amazing, Eric Schneiderman in New York State has filed suit against a bunch of banks and banksters. This is very interesting. You know, he's part of this task force that also is working with the president to look at crimes pre-bust, you know, before the Bush Great Depression, when the bubble burst in 2006, 2007, and then the stock market crashed in 2008, and everything went down over that three-year period, the last 3 years of the Bush administration. The Obama administration is looking into crimes committed back then, and there may even be some, you know, okay, you give us some money, we'll slap your hand, and nobody goes to jail kind of stuff going on there with the banksters. But Schneiderman now is saying, wait a minute, this is an ongoing crime. And these banks created this organization called MERS, which is the MERS, M-E-R-S, the Mortgage Electronic Registry System. And that they did, and the banks that are named, J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, as well as the MERS Corp, which is based in Virginia, and its subsidiary, Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems. And they say that MERS's, this is quoting from the complaint from the lawsuit that the Attorney General for the state of New York has filed against these banks. That MERS is created, quote, to allow financial institutions to evade local county recording fees, avoid the hassle and paperwork of publicly recording mortgage transfers, and facilitate the rapid sale and securitization of mortgages. And then it goes on to say, and I'm getting this, by the way, off dailycos.com, and refer you to that, to a nice piece written by Joan McCarter over there. It goes on to say that MERS's indiscriminate use of non-employee certifying officers, in quotes, to execute vital legal documents has confused, misled, and deceived homeowners and the courts, and made it difficult to ascertain whether a party actually has the right to foreclose. They're looking for injunctive relief as well as damages on behalf of thousands of homeowners in New York State. That's amazing. Injunctive relief is like, you know, stop doing it, and damages is, you know, stop doing it, and by the way, you know, you hurt us, you pay for the damage. One can only hope, right? Frank in Rock Island, Illinois. Hey, Frank. Anything goes Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was listening to your show, and earlier you were talking about the average hours per week that we were putting in, and
right,
how it slowly got better, and then in the 1930s it got into a 40-hour work week. But you got to consider, too, that that was with one parent working.
That's right.
Now you've got two parents working, so now we're 70% of the nation, that's a guess, is up to putting in an 80-hour work week, yeah, just to basically keep your head above water, you know. So it's, I don't know, I just want to make a comment.
You're absolutely
that,
right, and this is,
things have actually gotten worse.
They have, and since Reagan, and this is why when Republicans quote, you know, household income, they always quote household income. Well, the household income today is higher than it was when Ronald Reagan came into office. Well, yeah, that's because on average, two people are working. Well, not on average, it's like 1.7 or something like that. But more people in a household are working. If you look at individual wages right now, individual wages are not the $46,000 a year, which is household income. Individual wages, the median wage in the United States right now is $26,500 a year. And that ain't all that great in today's dollars, you know, compared to what it was in 1980. And so you're absolutely right. And we did not go in the direction of the leisure society, as was predicted in the 60s, because of Reaganomics. And instead, what has happened is you've got all this wealth flowing to the top. And now all these guys are getting together with the Koch brothers in their secret meetings and planning how they're going to buy our elections and fool us with millions and millions of dollars worth of advertising, just like, you know, Mitt Romney did down in Florida, crushing Newt Gingrich. Not that either one of them were, you know, paragons of honesty or anything, but we're seeing this in microcosm, the macrocosm that's coming 6 months down the road. And we're also seeing that the media is not reporting it for what it is, which is, you know, Shelley Adelson versus John Paulson. It's the Shelley Adelson, the guy who's funding Newt Gingrich's campaign, versus John Paulson, one of the Wall Street billionaires, funding the campaign of Mitt Romney. Well, and his friends. I don't mean to pick on John Paulson, but, you know, one of many. And with the Wall Street billionaires. And which is it going to be, the Wall Street billionaires or the pro-Israel billionaires? Or is it going to be some other group of billionaires? The oil barons, they have yet to weigh in. And, you know, and on it goes. So it's just going to be dueling special interest groups. Frank, thanks for the call. You know, excellent point. Vic in Pittsburgh, Missouri. Hey, Vic, what's up?
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. The purpose of my phone call earlier, a fellow called about you, me, and the SPP.
Right.
I watched that program as well. If you haven't seen it, you must watch it.
I wrote it down, in fact. I intend to go looking for it this weekend.
It totally explains everything, what's wrong with what's going on as far as buying elections and everything. In addition, though, it was talking about Canada and the Keystone Pipeline, and the reason why they're being forced up in Canada to sell the oil down to here instead of using it their own selves, and even though they have ample enough supply to be self-sufficient. And
why is that?
And the whole thing is that it's based upon the NAFTA and the global free market trade.
Oh, that's interesting.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to obfuscate the public from not knowing what's really going on between the closed doors of the G20 and all that kind of stuff and the special interest groups.
Right.
That
right. I figured there was probably also a piece of it, Vic, that the Canadians, frankly, just don't want all the pollution that comes with refining. And if we take that, if we take those externalities, because they, you know, if you refine in Canada and you produce, you know, thousands of cancers a year from the pollution from the refineries, they have a national health care system. It actually costs their country money. In the United States, if we have refineries, we don't have a national health care system. It doesn't cost us money. It means people either die, as 40,000 people do a year in the United States because they don't have health insurance, or that, you know, health insurance premiums go up and the average worker pays it. But, you know, there's no skin off anybody's nose with regard to the oil companies and the governments. But thank you, Vic, for the heads up on that. I do intend to go look for that. Stan in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Stan, what's up?
Well, I'd like to switch signals a minute, but maybe not so much. I told your host that I'd like to talk about the Komen case. I see the Planned Parenthood is getting their support back from the Komen Foundation.
Sort of.
To help women prevent breast cancer.
Yeah, hang on just a second here. Before you buy that hook, line, and sinker, the right-wingers at the Komen Foundation are staying in place, and they have said that, okay, for this year we're going to continue to fund Planned Parenthood, but that's no guarantee of future years. So,
right.
You know, I see this as just a PR move. And frankly, I've for some time been uncomfortable with many of, and not to single out Komen, many of these charities, these medical charities that basically are supportive of the drug industries and of the name the disease industries, which in some cases are not actually working in the best interest of the people, but they're working in ways that keep those industries very profitable.
Well, I happen to agree with everything you said. I have a background selling major medical insurance, so I have my own unique insight into the problem.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, have you ever seen a health insurance carrier disappear over the weekend?
No.
Vanish? Gone?
No.
Monday morning?
No.
I have. Okay.
Wow.
But anyways, what about, at least as you said, I agree with everything you said, but there's a warning here that I think have to keep repeating is call, email, wire, you know, get on the web, send the messages. Sometimes it makes a difference. I think we saw that last week in the Congress, even with the Republicans, in terms of the censorship issue and the protection of copyrights, which I agree with, but the proposals in Congress were suspended after massive, and in terms of technology, totally new approaches to lobbying.
Yes, people have to stand up and speak out, Stan. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you very much. You said it very, very well. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Back with your thoughts and mine right after this.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Anything Goes Friday here on your source of talk media for the sane among us, Steve in Warwick, Mass. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. I just got through talking with Senator Brown's office there.
Which Brown? Are you talking about Sherrod Brown or Scott Brown?
Scott Brown.
Okay, yeah, that's right. You're in Massachusetts. Okay.
Yeah.
And?
And I called up and I was asked them how they stood on the on the capital gains tax,
right,
your rate increase possibly, and they give me all the GOP, you know, running points about how it's good, you know, bad, for the economy and stuff like that, and about how much money they invest into the economy. So I suggested to him, I said, why don't you, you know, drop the working class, you know, tax rate down to 15% because it does the same thing. They said that, all right, I wasn't being serious and hung up on me.
Well, I'm guessing you weren't being serious, were you, Steve?
Well, all right, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, I figured.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
But see, there, you know, Scott Brown came into office with the help of the 1%. He's gonna try and stay in office.
Yeah.
He's going to try and defeat Elizabeth Warren with the help of the 1%. And they're all about the 1%. The 1% pay a top 15% tax rate, and the 99% pay a top 36% tax rate. And they want to keep it that way. Thank you very much. Steve, good on you for calling your senator's office, and thanks for reporting to us about what happened there. It's a good story to hear. Joe in Niagara, New York. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi, Tom. In today's culture, we've got the Patriot Act. We've got NDAA. We've got
Occupy movements being kicked out all over the place. And so our freedom of expression and freedom to of association are being taken away.
Or limited, at least, yes.
Well, you're still using the word corporatocracy instead of actually coming out and saying the word fascism. Is there a reason behind that?
Well, in many of the pieces that I was writing back in the mid-Bush years, from 2000 to 2008, I would often use the word fascism. And if you just Google Tom Hartman and fascism, you'll find a whole series of articles that I wrote using that and pointing out that up until 1978, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, I believe it was Merriam-Webster, defined fascism as the merger of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. And that is the direction that we're moving. What I found was that when you're, if you're writing for an audience of people who, who read Common Dreams or, read internet sites where they're already fairly familiar with what you're talking about, it makes sense to them and they get it. But when I use the word fascism on the radio or on television, and there are people who might have just tuned in and they're going, what? They tend to think that the word fascism means Nazism and that, that Hitler was a fascist. The reality is that Hitler wasn't so much of a fascist. I mean, he did combine certain elements of industry with the state, but mostly Hitler was a cult leader and Nazism was a weird religious cult and a murderous one, and he was just a maniacal dictator. The fascists were Franco in Spain and Mussolini in Italy. And in fact, in Italy, Mussolini even dissolved the parliament. And instead of having each parliamentary district, each the equivalent of each congressional district in Italy, elect who they were sending to the parliament, the largest corporation in each congressional district got to pick who they were going to send to parliament. He renamed the parliament as the
Alec, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does. Forgive my bad Italian, but they renamed it as the Cameo de Fascisio Corporationes. The Chamber of the Fascist Corporations. And that was the name of parliament for, half a decade or a decade or so in Italy. And it was Giovanni Gentile who wrote, who was the ghostwriter for Mussolini, who in the Italian Encyclopedia Italiana, the Italian Encyclopedia or Dictionary, defined fascism as the merger of corporate and state interests. So I'm not afraid to point that out, but I think when you just throw the word around, people think that you're being wildly hyperbolic and that you're talking about Hitler and, hey, we're nowhere near close to that. They're not rounding us up and putting us in boxcars. And, in fact, if anything, that kind of diminishes the memory of the horrors of World War II, and we don't want to do that. And so that's why I would prefer to use words like oligarchy or corporatocracy or kleptocracy, which I think are equally apt and are not as charged, not as loaded for people who don't really understand what the origins of these words are. Make sense, Joe?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Josh in Victoria, Texas. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Tom? Good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just kind of have a comment, about the Citizens United. If they could knock that out, that would be great, right? But, it seems like there's more to it than just taking the money out there. There's money, with the lobbyists, they're lobbying, congressmen and all this and that, there's money all over the place. Back in the day, they didn't have all this, right? I mean, they go town to town and talk to the people, represent people. So, if they went one step further and made some kind of law to get the lobbyists out of the picture, and just have the representatives do, like, town halls and stuff like that, so the people could go.
The constitutional amendments – no, I'm with you. The constitutional amendment that Bernie is proposing that you can find over at sanders.senate.gov, Jeff Clements is proposing that you can find at corporationsarenotpeople.com, the one that Move to Amend is proposing that you can find at movetoamend.org, all of them would empower state governments and the federal government to pass laws that regulate the behavior of lobbyists. And I think other than the few mostly Republicans that you'll find who are out there defending Citizens United because they're basically bought and owned by, some billionaire who's their friend, or they themselves are very, very rich, and they kind of like it that way. But they represent a very, very narrow slice of our representatives, both at the state and federal level. I think most people would like to get the money out of politics because they don't like having to beg for money most of every day as part of their job as a legislator. And so, you know, we need to create that grassroots effort. So go to movetoamend.org and sign on. It will accomplish that. Thanks, Josh.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Oh, and poverty in America. Mitt Romney's not so concerned.
Well, I love the tears. I've tried to be part of the way. You can't stop. Ever wonder if it's all for you. The world, I love the trains. I hope to be part of the
worker way. Falls into reactor pool at San Onofre nuclear plant. Holy cow. It's over at, well, it's in the Los Angeles Times blogs. That's you know, yesterday we had Kevin on from beyondnuclear.org talking about that, and that's amazing. The stuff that you learn in our chat room, which is open 24/7 at tomhartman.com, and you can find some of the finest minds in the world there to hang out with. Robert in Waterville, Maine. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I don't know if my feelings should be hurt or not, but it kind of just really irks me when I hear you say Obamacare, because it just perpetuates, you know, the crap that the Republicans are putting out on it. It should be the president's health care thing.
Well, it's the Affordable Care Act is actually the legal name of it. But when you say Affordable Care Act, people don't know what the heck you're talking about. And I think
when you say Obamacare, it just perpetuates all the negativity that they're putting out.
Only if you watch Fox News. If for me, I think that President Obama should get credit for what he did. And more Democrats are referring to it as Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, and to me, it keeps that negativity going.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got it, Robert. We're going to have to agree to disagree on that, but thanks for the call. Steve in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, Steve, you're on the air.
Well, okay, I guess you hear me on the phone before you do on the air.
Yeah, but there's a time delay. That's why you should turn down your radio or TV. Yeah.
Well, it's turned down. I can barely hear it, though. I have, of course, several issues I can bring up about the tangled web.
Please pick one.
Well, I've got two of importance. You talk about the Medicare prescription savings drugs for the millions of older Americans, how much they've saved in the last year.
In aggregate across the country, it's been $2.1 billion. But for an individual, that's probably what, you know, $10 or $20?
Well, okay. Now, aside from that, do you have any idea why two prescriptions would cost, this age drugs prescriptions, would cost the total of $1,410 per month for 30 tablets for one prescription and $709 for the other, which for the month totals $2,119 just for two prescriptions of age drugs prescriptions.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Steve, I don't, and I would guess that it has to do with the health or the pharmaceutical companies making a whole pile of profit, which is why the Bush administration was behind Medicare Part D. Because it's a $600 billion every decade gift to the pharmaceutical industry, and it has driven up drug prices, and it's going to continue to until somebody changes it. Renee in Judah, Wisconsin. Hey, Renee, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I had a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the fact, like, now that Indiana has now just signed into the right to work state or race to the bottom, however you want to look at it.
Yep.
Is there any kind of like studies or anything that would show like how this sort of destabilizes your tax base? And, you know, because I just look at it as like there's going to be a bunch of layoffs, at least in the public sector, because we're not going to be able to fund police or fire. Like, who's going to protect what if nobody has any money to keep public school going?
I can tell you that in right to work for less states, people make on average $5,300 a year less than in free bargaining states. And your workplace injuries in the right to work for less states are almost twice what they are in free bargaining states. And in 1957, the state of Indiana, which you just raised, the state of Indiana in 1957 actually enacted right to work for less legislation. The governor was unable to sign it because a crowd chased him out of the Capitol, but it went into law anyway. And it held. That was 57. In 58, there was a huge backlash in the election of 58. By the election of 1960, there was a large Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate in the state of Indiana. And by 60, I think it was 64 or 65, they repealed right to work for less in Indiana. And so it had gone back to being a free bargaining state. And now you've got, you know, again, a Republican majority funded by billionaires and you know, with the front man, John Kasich, you know, former talk show host and whatnot, a very glib guy and a former Fox News guy. And it's going to damage Indiana. It's just and the stats are out there. A good source of them, the AFL-CIO's website, AFL-CIO.org, is a good source, and ThinkProgress.org. Click on their economic blog, or just they've got a little search engine on there. You can find a lot of that stuff there. Renee, thank you for the call, and excellent point to bring up. Dr. Milan in Clark's Summit, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dr. Milan, what's up?
Yes, thank you for having me, and thank you for the show. I'm calling about an old idea worked out in the 40s, but it's actually newly rediscovered, where instead of uranium-235, they use thorium, which is atomic number is 2 less than uranium. It's 90.
Right.
And thorium is 4 times as abundant as uranium. That's number one. Number two, the process of the fission in a nuclear reactor is 400 times as efficient. And when you use this, you use it with a melted salt solution so that it's under atmospheric pressure.
Right.
And if there is any overheating because you cannot cool the mixture, you use the salt solution also in a kind of a drain plug, to put it simplistically, below. Yeah. And if it overheats, it simply drains it.
I'm familiar with that, and I'm familiar with the benefits of not having high-pressure reactors and the dangers of pressurized reactors. But here's the thing that you're missing, and that is you're talking fission. And fission is going to produce radionuclides that are much higher up and some that are way down on the atomic table, and it does produce radioactive waste as a byproduct, and it is concentrating, even though it's thorium, it is concentrating a radioactive compound that you're mining out of the earth. It is still one of the most expensive and potentially dangerous ways to produce electricity in the world. I mean, why do this when you've got enough solar power falling on the United States right now to power the country with existing technology 3 or 4 times over? You got the state of Texas now producing almost 20% of their power from wind. I mean, Germany in 10 years built out 10 megawatts of solar generating power, and this is the cloudiest country in the EU. Built out 10 gigawatts, excuse me, the equivalent of 10 nuclear reactors. Of power simply by giving people a tax subsidy to put solar panels on their roofs. They had to stop the program because they had so much power that the power grid couldn't handle it. So it's like, I understand your point, and thank you for calling and making it, but you'll never, ever, ever convince me that any kind of nuclear power is the way for us to go. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's up?
All right, Tom, I just want to bring up the fact I think we really need to hammer the Grover Norquist and all the pledge takers in this next election. We really have to go after them and really educate the country on what kind of effect this man is having on, like, the pipeline and our unfair tax code. Whenever the Reagan tax breaks ever, reverse, we get rid of it.
Yeah. No, I'm Mark, your phone's breaking up, but you're absolutely right. And I can see ads running, you know, against these Republicans who have signed Grover Norquist's pledge, and which is virtually all of them, which say John Boehner took an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. But it appears that more important to him is the oath that he took to multimillionaire lobbyist Grover Norquist to not raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires. And that's wrong. Dave in Nassau, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm good, but I'll get better.
Okay, great.
Hey, I call myself Bill Olimbecki. You got that?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Okay, I was thinking that that trickle-down economic theory is a bunch of horse meat. And I originally called you about food stamps and investing with Bain Capital, and all my money's in the Cayman Islands now.
Ah, okay, cool. So okay, you're taking good. you're taking Mitt Romney's investment advice and putting your money offshore.
Yeah, with the food stamps, I'm getting rich.
Oh, okay. right. Yeah, of course. Just ask Mitt. You know, our social safety net's just fine for the very poor in America. You don't have to worry about them.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. I, you know, this is sometimes satire makes the point so well, which is why John Stewart is so brilliant. Eric in Los Angeles got a minute for the break. Eric, what's up?
Hello, I wanted to Frank Luntzify the Buffett rule.
Okay.
Since Buffett has liberal leanings, you know, McConnell mm-hmm. and other Republicans just discount him.
Right.
So we should really call it the Reagan rule.
Yeah, or because Ronald Reagan rule. Yeah, and in fact, Jacob, can you dig out that Ronald Reagan clip? We'll play it when we come back from the break, because Ronald Reagan actually was the first big national politician to come out and just point out that, you know, it hadn't been since, I think it was 1919, and then Ronald Reagan did it in 1986, that the capital gains tax was identical to the ordinary income tax. And I'll play what Ronald Reagan had to say about it. Brilliant, Eric. Absolutely brilliant. And you know, maybe somebody at the White House is listening. Find that clip, which we are going to play for you in about 5 minutes, of Ronald Reagan and saying what Warren Buffett's saying, and start calling it the Reagan rule.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The Reagan rule. Should bus drivers pay more in taxes than millionaires? That's nuts. Yeah.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
For my dad, Louis Armstrong was his favorite musician. My dad played the trumpet, and we played that song at his funeral. Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video directors, Jim Javinsky, to phone screener Julie Lulley and Paul Edna, and our writer-researcher Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager Ron Hartenbaum, all the great folks at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dial Global on commercial stations from coast to coast, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial stations across the United States, Europe, and Africa, the Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV all across the North American continent, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others, to Dennis Trunov, Don Rojas, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to Rachel in Santa Fe, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you so much. Okay, we had a caller just before the break, the last break, who suggested that President Obama should not be calling this the Buffett rule. He should be calling it the Reagan rule because, you know, Warren Buffett's a Democrat and people just, you know, Republicans just don't take him seriously. If you called it the Reagan rule, then it would become Teflon. It would become bulletproof. You know, the Republicans couldn't knock it. And here's what Ronald Reagan had to say in 1986 when he was out campaigning to raise the capital gains tax rate up to 28% to be identical with the ordinary income tax rate, which he had just lowered to 28%. And he was successful in this, by the way. These two numbers were exactly the same for, I think, almost 2 years, certainly a little more than a year. And this is Ronald Reagan.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. They sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing while a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy.
There you go. And that's crazy. So call it the that's brilliant. Let's see, Frank, let's apply it. Yes. Let's call it the Reagan rule. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. How you doing, my brother?
Pleasant Point.
George Washington said that. But they turned it around, called it Point Pleasant.
George Washington named your city.
Yeah, he came through your surveying.
Wow.
And he said, this is a very pleasant point.
Yeah.
And then they turned it around, called it Point Pleasant.
Yeah.
This is the original happy hunting grounds that the Indians fought for.
Wow.
Anyways, I thought maybe me and you could get into something.
Okay.
How about me and you putting a bug in Michelle, First Lady Michelle's ear about starting a Girl Scout brownie troop?
Mm-hmm.
Ask me why.
Why?
Because West Virginia is going to become the new World Boy Scout Jamboree, 154,000 acres along the New River, which is the oldest river in the world. And it used to be the Jamboree was out in New Mexico, but they're going to change it over here.
Wow.
Then, President Barack, man, he can drive the Girl Scouts around, man, stuff. You know how to do the family thing?
Sure, sure.
And, see, last time West Virginia went McCain. This time, let's go Obama.
Okay, Sam,
hey,
thanks.
Barack. Thanks. Hey, Barack the Rock.
There you go, Barack the Rock. Okay, Sam, thanks a lot for the call. We'll see. I mean, it's we got a long way to go. Hildegard in Hot Springs Village. Hey, Hildegard, what's up?
Well, I'm just sort of wondering, not much, you haven't spoken much about it either, the possibilities of having some railroads being built here in the United States. Even China has done this. They've done things with the magnetic rails.
Yep.
And with having the Keystone Pipeline and all that, that's not the way to go. But if we had railroads, I mean, that would give people plenty of jobs.
You know, that is the perfect rebuttal, is why are we moving oil when we could be moving people? You're right. China just recently inaugurated a rail line. I forget the city that it went to between. I believe it was Shanghai and Beijing. I'm probably wrong on that, though. But it was the equivalent distance of Chicago to New York. And people can now make that trip in 5 or 6 hours because that train is going 200 miles an hour. And, you know, and they've done this from virtually nothing. I lived in China for a month in November of 86. And at that time, it was so rural and backwards, and there were no skyscrapers in Beijing, and you could stand on the street for hours and not see a car, and it has completely reinvented itself. And here we are in the United States with our infrastructure crumbling and decaying, and we're having a fight over whether we're going to transport Canadian oil to Texas refineries to ship down to South America and Europe. It's insane. You're brilliant point, Hildegard. Thank you very much. And I'm totally with you. High-speed rail is where it's at. Totally with you. Dave in Los Angeles. Hey, Dave, thanks for listening to K-Talk. What's up?
Hi, Tom. At the beginning of the hour, you brought up Attorney General of New York's lawsuit against the banks.
Eric Schneiderman, yeah.
Yeah, and I tell you, I want you to understand how big this is. This is the heart of the problem. This is the nexus. When you go after this, you start to look at all of the chain of title, which they broke, who actually owns the property. And then it brings into question the mortgage-backed securities. Were they valid or were they frauds? And most of them were frauds. And then you bring into situations all the way to Europe who bought those mortgage-backed securities and can now say, hey, this was fraudulent paper, and do the putbacks, what's called a putback to the bank,
yep,
and ask for their money back.
Or clawback.
This is huge. And he's just the first. Bo Biden is next in line in Delaware, where a lot of these corporations are incorporated. So he's got a lot of leverage. As does Schneiderman there in New York because of the headquarters.
Well, Schneiderman is in a unique position because he's the chief law enforcement officer in the state of New York. Beau Biden is just a senator. Wait a minute. You're right. He's the AG too, right? In Delaware.
That's correct.
Yeah, he's yeah.
And he's after it too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dave. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And that's you're spot on. And this is a big deal. And people need to educate themselves about what Eric Schneiderman is doing right now in the state of New York. We'll have the latest on the Nevada caucus results and how that may change the GOP field on Monday. And of course, you know, more on the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, democracy begins when you show up and participate. When you get active, tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.